Welcome to the Unusual Creatures Podcast, a podcast about the unusual creatures that fall in love, stay, stray, come back, and sometimes leave this insane business of artistry and show.
Against all odds, our guests have persevered and told stories using their mediums of choice. Now, these are their stories. And our stories.
The incredible people who you might know by sight, whose names you may not recognize, whose work you've definitely experienced or will one day experience.
Art is a ripple effect, and these artists' creativity makes a lasting impact. Let's hear more. Good morning, good evening, good night, ladies, gentlemen, non-binary humans. Welcome to the Unusual Creatures Podcast. My name is Jenny Gomez.
And I'm Thomas Dane.
And there he is. There he is.
And this is the Jennifer Gomez, the darlings, the Jennifer.
Jenny. I haven't gone by Jennifer in a clown's age.
In a clown's age. What is a clown's age?
I don't know. I think I just made it up.
Let's ask the clowns. Shout out to past guests. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Tom and I are just getting back from Austin, Texas, where we were at the Outlier HQ Podcast Festival, meeting a bunch of fellow podcasters and learning how to do this a little bit better so that we become better hosts. We make it much more fun for you as our amazing guests. Tom, what did you think?
Shout out to the guests. What did I think of? Well, I love the festival. Shout out to everybody at the festival and everybody we met. Austin, ciao. That is heat. That is hot. Satan lives there because that's how hot it is. Okay, that's where he set up camp. That's where he set up camp.
Texas is a whole different ball game when it comes to heat. I remember the first time it feels like you're inside of a blow dryer. It's like dry, but then also wet. It defies physics.
My Uber driver, because we were talking, shout out to him. I forget his name. He was great. He was like, you're getting out right in time. It was 105 there yesterday when we left. I was like, oh, no.
I know. And August gets up into like the 100 and teens. It's wild.
No.
Yeah. So we it
was. Austin's a lovely city. Everyone check it out when you get a chance. It's one of those places to see.
So yeah. Good times. It was. And we wanted to also thank all of our listeners. We have a small but mighty contingent of guests that keep tuning in every week. Mighty. And we're just so grateful that you guys are listening, that you're enjoying the stories of the artists and the creatives that we speak to every week. If you want to give us some feedback, positive, negative, please feel free to shoot us an email at unusualcreaturespod@gmail.com and let us know what you're liking. Let us know what you're hating. We just want to hear from you. We want to know everything about you. So please reach out anytime. If there's any questions you have for past guests, we would love for you to shoot those our way. Maybe we could get a little bonus episode with some of our past guests, get some audience engagement, like they like to say. We just want to know a little bit about you guys too. So thanks for listening.
If you want to know anything about us, you know, I'm looking for my stalker. Where are you? Where are you, friend?
We need to get Tom on Twitter where all the trolls are. But now that Elon Musk bought it, I don't know who knows. But anyways. Tom, I know this week is a very special episode. And I'm super excited to dig in with our guest. But Tom, you are lucky enough to know this week's guest. So do you want to tell us a little bit about who we're talking to today?
I will. Today we are speaking with the irreplaceable, incandescent, one and only Miss Monique Cotta. Monique and I go back to the days of waiting tables in New York as struggling artists. And when I met her, she was a dancer, model. Because y'all, she cute. If you look her up, you see her bio and photo on our page. She cute. First of all, it's Mother's Day. We're recording on Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers. When you hear this, it'll be past Mother's Day. But Monique is a mother of twin boys, a single mother of twin boys. And I think that she does. I think mothers are not given the due that they deserve. And Monique is definitely in need of some due. She deserves all the accolades. And she's working on getting her son to Spain, to a very special violin camp that we're going to discuss. And she has an Indiegogo. And I was really touched by their story. And I was hoping that everybody would be too. And you know what? We'll just get into it. Let's just jump into it, shall we?
Let's.
It's ladies and gentlemen, Monique. Hello, Monique.
Hi.
Hello. Good morning. How are you?
And it is morning for you. Like we're taping on the East Coast and it is morning. You're on Cali time.
Oh my God. I thought you were on EST, girl. I am so, so sorry. Hello. Welcome. Good morning to you. I should have sent you a big box of coffee and some donuts. Lord, where are you in California?
Shot of Sambuca.
We are in Southern California in Orange County in a tiny little quaint town called Orange, actually.
Oh, so. Orange, Orange County.
The town is called Orange?
Yes. Yes.
That's too cute. Okay.
Known for its orange groves, and there's a lot of, you know, everywhere you go, somebody has at least two or three trees in their backyard. So it's pretty cool.
Oh my God. I love that.
Are you growing oranges? Did you get into it?
I am. I have oranges, mandarins, lemons. I do.
Everybody in Orange just has beautiful citrus in their backyard. That sounds idyllic.
Oh, it's really wild. Yeah. And then it's really cool because we live in a cool neighborhood where, you know, everything is organic, you know, and people will leave like baskets out, take one, you know, so it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
some sort of a California version of Mayberry or something like, you know,
there you
like,
go. There you go. Yeah.
I don't know if I would trust that though. You know, recently during the pandemic, I got new neighbors here in Florida and they came knocking on the door one day. Really lovely. Hi, Jessica and Tito, because I think they listen. And they came up with an apple pie. They're like, hi, I just wanted to say, you know, we're your neighbors. And I'm like, there's probably arsenic in this. I don't understand. What is this kindness?
Oh my God.
I ate it later, though. When I had enough vodka, I was like, let me have that pie. I was like, let me see what happens.
Take your chances, right?
So I don't know if I would just trust baskets of fruit strewn about the streets, but that sounds lovely.
You know what? I have actually partaken of the fruit and I'm still here to talk about it. So
So it's happy, healthy, friendly fruit. We love that. Tom says he knew you when you guys were struggling artists in New York City, a dancer and a model. I mean, let's talk a little bit about like what drew you to the arts and then how you ended up in New York City and then in the Citrus Mayberry of California now.
What is your villain origin story, Monique?
Oh, gosh. So, you know, I was very tall. By the time I was 11 years old, I was already like 5'9½", you know?
Wow.
And my best friend and I, she was a really good dancer as well. And she would choreograph. Every day we came home from school, she'd make up these choreographies on the spot. And then her mom would come home and video record us, you know? And so I remember meeting her aunt, and her aunt is a seamstress. I don't know if I can do this, but shout out to Sun and Seed. She actually still makes clothes and gardening attire and everything like that. But so it started when I was early, and I would go in her room and look at all her modeling pictures. And I thought, you know, maybe I should be a model. Maybe I should take pictures, you know?
Yes.
She would have us in her her local like fashion shows. And so it pretty much took off from there. You know, my mom ran with that. I used to do extra work. As you know, like when you're younger, they really don't, well, at that time, not too long ago, but what I'm saying is pay for the social workers and stuff on the set. And I don't think they were really too crazy about that. For as far as modeling goes. So I got into acting. And so I did a lot of extra work for like movies. I remember I did like Tehachapi with Christina Applegate, and that's actually where I got my SAG waivers. And oh, nice. I went on to do, like, I was a regular on Sister Sister, things like that.
Shut
and
up, really? With Jack A. Harry? I love her. Yeah. Is she yeah. crazy in person?
Oh, she's so sweet. She's so sweet. Yeah. And then, so fast forward, I did that throughout high school. And so once I graduated from high school, I just figured, you know, that's when I got my first serving job. And then I figured, you know, I can't be working like this. I'm too cute. Yeah. Like, so I started saving. I saved up my pennies. I went to Europe and I tried to pursue a modeling career over there because, you know, Tyra Banks, you know, that's what she did.
That's right.
And so when I went over there, I went to Italy, I went to Milan, and I submitted my portfolio to, gosh, I don't even remember those, Wilhelmina, things like that. And
yeah.
They really don't have a Black a market for Black models there, you know, and they were like, you're beautiful, but we already signed one Black model and she's not getting any work. So there's really no point.
And we can only just have the one. Sorry. Thank you.
Yeah, just the one. Jesus.
So I came back here and I started dating a guy who was Arab. He was Arabic. And so his mom used to play Arabic music, and I just fell in love with one of the artists. Her name was Om Kulthum, and she's like our Aretha Franklin, you know, or modern day Adele, you know what I mean? Just very powerful. And in Arabic music, they called, it's called tarab. And so it like invokes like just emotion in you. And that's what I felt. And so I went to my local community college and I signed up for what I thought was going to be a dance class, you know, and I got there and it was actually an audition for a show. And I got there and I'm like, and these girls are all like, oh, you know, because they had been performing for so long. And I'm like, I'm in the wrong place. I just wanted to come dance, you know, I just wanted to come learn.
Sure.
And so the director, she's like, why don't you stay? So I just kind of stuck around for a little bit, just trying to, you know, learn by watching the other girls, and we auditioned, and lo and behold, I made it. So
that's like one of those stories that people are like, oh, it just kind of happened, you know, like Lana Turner at Schwab, sort of like, it's one of those, like, yeah, it just went and oops, there you go. I was like, whoops, you never know.
I got it.
Right.
Gotta try. And
so, like, yeah. And so then I ended up having a solo piece in that, in the performance. And it kind of just took off from there, you know. I started traveling with her dance company. We went, you know, locally, we went to Vegas, and we ended up going to Egypt. And that's when I knew, like, this is what I wanted to do, you know.
Wow.
So I came back here and I was dancing with the ensemble, but it was pretty hard because, again, I'm very tall. So when it comes to staging and stuff like that, and I felt like I had the technique, why am I not in more pieces, you know? So I thought, I'm going to go to New York and, you know, try and do it, you know, solo. And that's where I ended up meeting Tom along my journey. So
let me ask you, what is it like on the modeling aspect? I guess you were our first model. I didn't realize that. I think you are our first legit model as an interview. I always wonder, like, you have to have some sort of confidence. Like, what is that like? How do you say that to yourself? Like, I'm pretty. Like, you know, like, what is, like, how do you look at yourself and stay humble and solid and be like, okay, you know what? I am hot enough to do, like, what is that mindset like? Because I don't have it. I don't know. I'm like,
you know, I really,
or the mindset.
I mean, I was a child. I was 11, 12 years old when I started. I wasn't even thinking of myself as, you know, beautiful or pretty or, you know, whatever. I was always very quiet, shy, you know, and I would have people telling me all the time, oh, you're so beautiful, you know, and I don't know, I just shrugged it off, whatever, like, where are the boys at? Like, I want to play like Barbie, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't even thinking about that. But I will tell you, once I started modeling, that was the beginning of the demise of my self-esteem, any kind of self-esteem that I had, because it was like, oh, you know, you're pretty, but your nose is too big, or, you know, things like that. And so my mom was actually considering getting me a nose job. And I was like, look, I just felt like, well, what's wrong with my nose? Well, what's wrong with my features? Like, why do I, you know, it's permanent, you know? So I think that's where it started for me. So modeling was very short-lived for me. I think I did it for about 2 years, and then I felt more comfortable with the acting because I felt like they just accepted me, you know, for who I was, and that's what I needed.
What a great sense of self you had, though, to be that young and be like, "Well, I'm not going to change me. I'm not going to do this." And question and be like, "What's instead of compromising and giving in?" Because that's what a lot of people do. It's what a lot of people, and then the demise becomes even worse. And you're left with this shell, you know, and you were like, no, not me.
Right. And that was hard because, you know, my mom was fronting the bill for everything, you know, and I was like, well, then I'm just not going to do it. I feel like as a child, I don't know. And I'm still the same now to this day. I hope, I believe that I would never you know, sacrifice my standards or my morals to have that limelight. You know what I mean? If that happens for somebody and you make that choice, I mean, that's up to you. I just, not for me now. It's hard because, you know, like, I don't want to say true artist or whatever. I feel like everybody has talents. Like, it just blows me away. Like, you know, people that don't even have to try or put forth an effort. But then I feel like there is a grade of people that, like I am, that I really come alive and I'm really moving to dance, or when I'm doing something, you know, artistic that I'm good at, I'm naturally good at. And I, you know, it centers me.
Well, so you moved to New York. You're like, I want to do this. This is the acting, you know, I want to do this acting thing. I want to keep dancing. What happened in New York? You met Tom Waiting Tables. So that's how you're paying the bills.
We know that story.
Yeah.
It's funny that she didn't have confidence, or that she was like, this is like the last, like when you met at least, and especially back in the day, this bitch came strolling in 6 foot, whatever, like gorgeous, like I'm here to wait tables. You know what I mean? Like, and she was intimidating. People were intimidated by her because you had such a strong presence, but also just so extroverted, outgoing, funny. She would dance the drop of a hat, start singing a song to a table for no reason. You know.
Again, that's being there in the moment. And I, well, I didn't live in LA, but, you know, you run across people that, you know, are traveling back and forth. And I did it, you know, every week. When I moved to New York, it was something different. There was something different about the people there. I will say that. And it was just, maybe it could have been because of my age and it just a better, like, understanding of these different talents and these people and what they're really doing, you know? But I think that helped me to come into who I was then. When I was waiting tables in New York, I was also still traveling and learning, and then dancing in the city on the weekends, and sometimes in Astoria, Queens, where they had like Little Morocco. Oh, and so there was like a lot of Moroccan and Egyptian and Arabic. There was like a strip on Steinway Street where I would go and perform as well. So
is that the kind of dance specifically that you did?
No, that was my emphasis, you know, but I did, like Bollywood. I really love samba. I did samba as well. Just world dance. I feel like that is, you know, the one language that we can all understand. It doesn't matter if I understood the words or what have you, but we all come to feel that same appreciation or feeling that the artist meant for us to feel when they posted or what have you.
And so you were mostly dancing, and then were you auditioning for Broadway? Were you, what was the goal? Like, were you trying to do, what was the goal for Monique Carter when she moved to New York?
I was not doing any acting at that time.
Just dance.
Just dance. And I was still doing a little modeling too, for like local, like dance wear and stuff like that. That's what I was doing.
Oh, nice.
But, yeah. Just trying to survive and travel with my dancing. That's what I was really focusing on. I have the privilege of being able to perform with live musicians or live music. I was so spoiled to be able to do that for majority of my dance career.
That's amazing.
Very nice.
That's amazing. So you're traveling, you're waiting tables with Tom, throwing fabulous 30th birthday parties in hot apartments.
Not apartment. Hot, like Austin hot, actually. That
like
night.
Austin hot.
Texas hot.
Yeah. And you're dancing, you're traveling all over the world doing Egyptian and Arabic dancing and you know, performing on Steinway Street. I'm told that this is where sort of Mother's Day comes in. Is this true? What happens now, Monique?
Well, there was this musician. Well, they all say,
everybody already listening is like, here we go.
Here we go. Buckle up.
Musicians. And I was like, I ain't gonna do it, girl. I ain't gonna do it. Oh, I did it.
What type of musician?
Oh, gosh. It's actually pretty brilliant. He plays several instruments, but he got me with the violin. It is my favorite instrument. There's a lot of it in Arabic music. And fun fact, I actually used to pluck the violin when I was in the fourth grade.
Well, there you go. And so it begins.
It's actually my favorite. It's always one of the one I've always wanted to learn, but I hear I've always heard it's like one of the most difficult to learn.
It is.
And I think I stopped myself. I wish I hadn't. It's one of my biggest regrets, but go on. So Got you with the violin.
Yeah. He got me. So I kind of backed off from waiting. I left before Tom did, and then I started doing promotional wine and liquor promotions. And,
oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I was doing that, and I actually did that up until the week I went into labor. So it was really good money, and I knew some of the locations where I would sell. I knew them very well, so that was the only reason why I was able to get away with it. I'm probably gonna get somebody in trouble for that, because pregnant women should not be advertising alcohol, but I did. And
so you find out you're pregnant, and then what was the day like when they're like, oh, by the way, there's two heartbeats? It's twins. Oh.
Okay. All right. So I was, artists, we do all kinds of things. So let me back up to you. It's actually a pretty funny story. So, I had another dancer friend that she was like, look, girl, you need to take a pregnancy test. And I was like, oh, I ain't pregnant. It's just a little tardy, you know? And so then she was like, look, just go to the 99 cent store and just take one. So I said, okay. So at that time I was in cosmetology school, and there was always this saying, like, don't drink the water because everybody ends up freaking pregnant. And I was like, not me. I have holier than thou chonies, and it's not going to happen. So I ended up talking this girl into going with me to, I went to go take the test, and I ended up talking her into going in, because it was like very secret, I was, the quiet, the good girl, and I go in there and I take the test, and I kid you not, I put the pee on the stick, and immediately, like within like microseconds, both lines. And I was like, I was hyperventilating in the bathroom, I remember. And girls were like, they're like, are you okay? They're like knocking on my stall, like, are you okay? And I was like, and I'm like crying. And I'm like, because at that moment, like everything, my whole life just flashed before my eyes. I was like, that's it. It is a wrap, And so I come out. So I'm like, I get myself together finally. And I, I'm wiping my eyes and my face with that, cheap toilet paper, 2-ply. And I come out and I remember this because I was telling her, I was like, oh my gosh, it's positive. And then I look into the mirror and I see like toilet paper just caked up on my eyelids. Oh my gosh, I'll never forget that. And then from that point forward, I was like, okay, this is happening. I didn't get pregnant until I was 31. So I'd always wanted kids, but by that time I was just like, it's just not my card. So right. I'm just going to continue dancing and doing what I do and traveling the world. And, and so I knew all of that was going to come to an end. So I ended up getting a midwife, and I remember I was so like deathly ill, and I had morning sickness all day. And I was gaining so much weight. And she was like, what are you eating? And I was like, nothing. I can't even keep it down. Like nothing, And so I ended up getting really sick. And my dance mentor, Norhan, she took me to the hospital. And I said, so backing up a little bit, my midwife was like, I would always ask her, hey, like, I want to get an ultrasound. And she's like, no, that's too much radiation for the baby. And you're going to do it like we did in the old days. You just wait and see what you, and I was like, what?
Are you crazy?
Geriatric pregnancy. I want to know what is going on. This is my first child. But we would listen to the heartbeat. And that's the funny part. I only heard one. We only heard one. So 5 months is when I found out that I was having twins, and I had gotten really sick. My mentor took me to the hospital. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, I finally get to sneak and do an ultrasound, So I'm like, hey, can we do an ultrasound? And she's like, yeah. And she's like going, and I'm like looking at the screen, and I was like, and so she's like looking and she's going slow. And I see these two like large bubbles, and I'm like, is that two heads? And she's like, it sure does look like it, huh? And I said, oh, yeah. And so at that time, like, she's like, it was like she pressed a button or something to like not alert me, because I didn't really hear her say, like, all of a sudden I had all these nurses and doctors coming in, and everybody's coming in. There was at least about 6 or 7, you know, medical professionals in there. And I'm like, and so I called my mentor and I was like, oh my gosh, Noor, I think I'm having twins. And she's like, what? She's like, let me in there. They wouldn't let anybody in the room. And so she was like, find out if you are. And I said, you know, I kept saying, excuse me. And they're all talking in their medical jargon that I cannot understand. And I'm like, and this is one doctor, he finally gets so irritated with me and he turns around and he's like, what? And I'm like, I just wanted to know, am I having twins? And he was like, yes, we're just trying to figure out which type of twins. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like it's happening. Like I have a blessed uterus, like it's happening. So from that point, I was like, yeah, I'm having twins. And it's been a blur pretty much since then.
since that moment.
And you were single. And you were single at this point. I mean, you were always single through
the entire time. Yeah. But I had so much support from the dancers in the community, even some of the musicians that worked with their donor. I won't be petty, their father. And
you be what you need to be.
You know, I don't want to teach them anything negative like that. It's you know, some people just aren't ready. And I'll tell you, I wasn't ready either. You know what I mean? But some people step up and some people, you know, so what have you. I will say that if it weren't for him, I wouldn't have the beautiful boys that I have. So sure. I really can't complain. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then so I'm did you, whew, twin sons, and then
identical, right? Identical.
They're identical twins.
Yeah. So I texted him and I was like, hey, do you see, that's another thing. When you're sleeping around with people, you need to know DNA. Okay. Like what you got going on in your family.
That's merch. That is merch right there. That is merch.
So I was like, hey, do you have twins in your family? And he was like, yeah, my uncles, his dad's brothers are identical twins. But as I started doing research about twins, when you have identical twins, that is not actually, it's not a genetic thing. Fraternal twins are. Identical twins is a mutation of the cells. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that is interesting.
But I often wonder if the mutation can be genetically passed on. But yeah, so I was in, it was full term pregnancy. We actually induced, like they got an eviction notice. Like I was, I could not sleep. I could not breathe. So I started dilating like on a Tuesday, and they were like, okay, we're gonna admit you. And then like we were just waiting, and then you know finally on the, you know, they had to manually do everything because they wanted to stay longer, they really did, and we weren't having that. So
how far along were you?
I was 38 weeks.
Oh, that's wow. Okay, now it's time to go.
But you know what? When we were born, they were both 21 and a half inches long. Micah, the baby A, was 6 pounds, and Sol was 5.5 or something. So,
that's huge for twins.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. You know, I'm a big girl, though. I'm a big girl. So it was funny because when I would be walking, like even when I was, you know, I was a fixture at the place where I would do the liquor and wine promotions. And it was so funny because sometimes people wouldn't see me for a very long time. And then like, they'd be like, hey, and then like turn around and it was just like, couldn't tell I was pregnant from behind. But oh boy, when I turned around,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I had a lot of support from my friends because I ended up getting really sick, and I was suffering from postpartum preeclampsia. And so, yeah, so I had to be on medication. Well, I was hospitalized for about a week And then when they released us, I was on medication and my kids would not sleep, you know, and they were up every 15 minutes. And so it was like, they really came together and, you know,
waged like, war on you,
you know what I mean? So taking care of the kids and my hot little apartment in Astoria where, you know, you have swamp coolers, you know, there's no central heating and air. It was crazy. So like by the time they were 2 months, we had to piece New York out.
Yeah.
I could barely make it with, you know, and then just like no elevators, like it was just so crazy.
No.
Double stroller down the stairs because I lived on the second floor, and then going and like, because we had to walk, you know? So I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, like I just couldn't do it anymore. So I had to bow out and come back home to Cali. So
sure. I mean, that makes sense. New York seems miserable as a new parent. It really does. It really does.
Because I would look at parents like girls like walking their babies down the street like with the strollers with the plastic cover on in the snow and stuff, and I was like, oh no, you know. But it really makes no sense to have a car if you're in New York either, you know what I mean? So it's just like, it was not ideal situation. So I'm really glad that we came back home, but I do miss my New York piece for sure.
Yeah. And when you came back home, did you because like I'm sure any plans that you might have had just went out the window, so of course you're like at this point probably having to improv. Like improv like what you're gonna do next. Did you stick with dancing? Did you pivot from that point?
Oh yeah, no, at that point it was just like survival mode, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And just like still in awe, because it's funny, if you learn anything from me today, kids, just know that protection is not 100. And I'm not talking about birth control. Like, we condomed it up, okay? And still, lo and behold, it's so funny because for years, I would still wake up and be like, how did this happen? How do I have these two long little noodles lying, you know, around the house? Like, how did this happen? And now I think I'm just like, well, okay, you know, they're here, you know? But yeah, that was crazy. So from that point, I was just like, okay, I need to be able to take care of my kids, support my kids, because I'm in this alone, you know. I don't really have any family. My grandmother, she was very supportive, but she was very ill, and I unfortunately just lost her 2 years ago. But
I'm sorry.
It's okay. So, you know, I decided to go back to school, and you know, I had all these credits, but they were all over the place. So then I suffered from postpartum depression. There was a lot of things going on. But I feel like everything, like, even though it was crazy and chaotic, like it couldn't have happened any better, because everyone and everything that I needed and my children needed were always there. Like it's crazy. So because of the postpartum, I mean, it was traumatic. Like I almost died, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I had a therapist coming to the house, and then she noticed, like, you know, your kids are, you know, they would do things like when she would come in the house and like, you know, start hitting their head or like throwing things at her, or, and she was like, hey guys, like, why are you doing that? Like, you know me. She came every week faithfully.
And they're how old at this point?
They were probably a little bit over one. And then baby A, Micah, the firstborn, he started talking, you know, probably like saying words like mama or, you know, things like that. And then all of a sudden he just started regressing. He couldn't approximate anything with his mouth, and Soul never said anything, but he did, you know, start walking by 10 months. I don't even remember. I'm such a bad mother. Like how old he was, started crawling, but
you had a lot going on. It's okay.
Right. Yeah. He was always on the move, you know what I mean? And so they came in and they did an assessment, and they did like problem solving with the kids, and they were like, they're totally smart, they know what's going on, you know, they're just boys, and boys are delayed in speaking, you know. We couldn't really explain the behaviors when they would get around people or what have you, and you know, the intense crying all the time and the not sleeping. And so then I went in to take them, but they gave me a referral, and then I went in to have them assessed somewhere else. And then that's when we started getting early intervention, which was by 2 years old. And by 5 years old, they were officially diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder and ADHD.
Wow.
I think so.
And
nothing.
Nothing. No, don't be sad. It was.
I know
just,
we all got like woof. But like, there's nothing wrong with that.
That was heavy.
Listening. Like I think we should. I think we're all smart people, and I'm hoping that the world's in a better place. That this is not a bad thing. It's just a difficult thing. It's just a thing, and just one of the things that people are dealing and but can live very full lives with.
Well, you
but
know,
it's not easy.
I appreciate you saying that because. It's not until now that I'm really starting to realize that it is okay. You know, I think I was so concerned from them and, you know, like me being a woman and then on top of that, being a Black woman, okay. Like maybe not everything is going to, you know, we're working on inclusivity. It sounds great on paper, you know, and it's a very hard thing for all of us to put into motion and really, you know, you know, deal with on a daily basis. And so this entire time, you know, I've had professionals, paraprofessionals coming into my house telling me, oh, like you need to do this. And my kids didn't start talking until like they were after five. We didn't think they were going to talk at all. So it's really a blessing. And I think a lot of it has to do with the early intervention. You know, there were a lot of things that it was just hard because I became, you know, straight coming out of the postpartum depression into, okay, like, I'm not equipped to being able to help my kids with this. So then I started going to school for psychology so that I can, you know, and early child development so that I can help my kids, you know, but I was still in the back seat while everybody was driving the vehicle, moving my kids from place to place. And it wasn't until, you know, we've been doing OT, speech therapy, ABA therapy, the whole nine yards for all of these years. And, you know, Micah, he has a very strong personality and started express, like I would notice there was a lot of like, there's always a reason for a behavior, you know, and it's a form of communication. There's something going on there. And I realized like, maybe all of these therapies aren't the best thing for him. And maybe, you know, like one of the things that I've had a tough time with is like, even from the time that they were, you know, toddlers, if they were crying, they had to calm down first and then I can engage with them. Right. Because you're reconditioning that type of behavior. And like, it makes sense if you think about it, like you're conditioning children, like, hey, like when they're crying, when they cry, they know you're going to come running. Right. So they're trying to extinguish this behavior, but my children don't know how to self-soothe, you know? So, I kind of felt like I was never really there emotionally for my kids, you know? and so I feel like this guilt, you know, I'm like, oh, it caused a wedge, but I feel like it's just guilt within me. So I started taking a class recently because I do homeschool my children on teaching kiddos with extraordinary needs and just watching.
Oh, I like that. I like that term, extraordinary needs. Is that what we like, is that the right thing to say? Is that what we should be saying now? Or is that like,
oh yeah, it's like, it's so funny because at first you wouldn't say a person that is an autistic person, you would say a person with autism, but now it's coming back. So I think it's so, again, we're still trying to figure it all out. You know what I mean? But yes, extraordinary needs is a term that I hear quite often. And then I realized hearing, you know, there's a couple of phenomenal movies on Netflix if you ever want to check them out, which is, there's one, it's called Why I Run. And then another one is called Crip Camp. And it was talking about persons with disabilities, how they advocated them for themselves throughout the civil rights movement and how we came into having all of these accommodations that we have, like the ramps and making sure that buildings that have more than one story has an elevator so, you know, everybody can get to their destination, right? And I thought, wow. And there was one advocate on there who said, you know, if you don't teach your children how to be their own advocate, like nobody's ever going to do it for them. And that's right. When I really started changing my frame of mind. And when that happened, that's when these doors opened up for my son's soul, who I said, okay, I'm going to put him into an orchestra. And I had him audition. Now, to reverse a little bit, when you have these children, there's like different things that they recommend for you. Like we did art therapy. Mike is still doing that. We did horse therapy. That was really good for Soul until he jumped off the horse a couple of times. That's a whole nother story. Look, his spidey senses, like the horse.
Like, nope, I'm out.
Like, where's he going? I'm out. And we're like, you're not supposed to jump.
To jump off the horse. Yeah. Right. That was your reaction to the situation.
And that's we're okay. We're not going to do that anymore. Thank goodness it was only a pony, but still. So I started getting him into music, and he started playing the piano about 2 years ago. And I remember he was on winter break. I try not to let my kids like sit and watch TV all day. Like I'm not about that. So I'm like, okay, you're going to have to do something creative. Why don't you keep playing the music that you learned, or, you know, let's do Legos, let's do something. And so he would go in his room, get on his computer and Google songs. Cause I play classical music a lot in the house.
Love that.
He went on his computer, looked up the title of the song, like, Mom, what's the name of this song? Moonlight Sonata, Beethoven. He taught himself how to play it within like a week. And I was like,
that's crazy.
Excuse me. On the piano?
On the piano. And I said, oh my gosh, like, okay, this kid is serious, you know, like he doesn't. And it's so funny because even as his mother, like he just does not talk much. Like he's just like, he has a lot of anxiety. He always sucks on his lip and he's always holding on to his belly button. Like he's just always like, you know, that's it. And so once he did that, I started paying for privates for him. And then he started composing his own music.
What?
And I remember it was so funny because Micah just fight so much. They're like night and day, seriously. And so Micah was like, Mom, Soul's playing piano and he's not practicing what he should be. He's making up his own songs. And I was like, what?
You're so like, wait a second.
Right. And I'm like, that sounds pretty good. And so when he was going to have a lesson again, I asked his teacher, I said, hey, did you teach Soul that song? And he's like, no, I've never heard that before. And I was like, oh my gosh, he really did make up his own song. So then they started working on that together. Fast forward, we have a lockdown, right? So he's like over the piano. He's just like, whatever.
I'm just boring now. Like, so he's, you know, like,
right. He did. And so he was like, Mom, I really want to play the violin. And so,
like, gosh. Where have I heard that one before?
Uh-oh. Right. And I was like, you know what? You need to finish that piano lesson stuff first, you know? And he's like, no, Mom, please. So then I don't know why I did it, but I found one shop that was open during the quarantine. You had to make appointments, and we just so happened to they weren't busy and they allowed us to come in. And I was just looking, and it was like just as costly as it was to rent a violin than to just own one, right? So I'm like, okay, you know what? And he's like, please, Mom, please, Mother, I will never ask for anything again. Please, Mother, please get me a violin. And so I got him the violin, and I'm like, okay, you better make sure that you practice, you know? And he's like, I will. And see, I didn't do my research first because there's not a lot of teachers around here that really, you know how to play. And so luckily that store referred us to a teacher that he had. So I think it was like 2 months later, you know, this guy calls here and he was like, yeah, I got your number. And so right away I put Soul into lessons, private lessons. And the guy was coming here and they would ride with their mask on. And, you know, he learned how to read that music very quickly. And then, you know, Soul's like, Mom, he loves John Williams. And so he said, I want, you know, he was requesting these books. So I'm going on Amazon. Oops, should I not say Amazon? Anyhow,
I was going on Amazon. You can say Amazon. Amazon, pay us money.
Amazon, yes, right? Thank you. We love you.
So I went on there and I got these music books. And I kid you not, like he would just, because he knows how to read the music, he would just look at the music and just start playing the song, like just practice a couple of times and then he's over it. And then he's on to the song. And I'm like, wait a minute, you know? So then, you know, his ABA therapist said, you know, you should really put him into a youth orchestra to get him, you know, involved with, you know, like giving him a sense of community and to help with the socialization skills. So I'm calling around. A lot of them don't, they only partnership with brick and mortar schools. And because I homeschool my kids wouldn't qualify to get into them. And then I found one conductor and he said, you know, you really should put him in this one orchestra over in Irvine, which is like two cities over. And he's like, it's a working orchestra and your kid would learn a lot. And so I said, okay. So I didn't want to drive to Irvine, but I figured I'd give them a call. And so the
conductor, nobody in California wants to drive anywhere.
we don't. It's too much traffic going on here. It's almost as bad as New York over there. So so I called her. And she said, okay, I'm teaching all day, but go ahead and send over audition tapes and or clips and I'll get back to you. And so I sent her over about three or four different songs and she texted me right away. And she said, I want to see him tomorrow at my studio. Wow. So we take him over there and she said, you know what? He is very good. He's very brilliant. You know, he has some things. She said, he doesn't play like he sees it. He plays from his heart. Wow. And what
the way his mother dances. Yes.
Right. So she said he's very gifted and I really want him to perform with us in Spain this year. And that was the 1st of April. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to give my kid this opportunity. You know what I
mean? So here we are. Well, one, have you noticed a difference in him? Like, has it opened up his,
you know,
his autism and his ability to communicate in other ways?
That music is just his form of communication. He will come to me and ask me like when that happened, he was like, Mom, are you proud of me? And I think just seeing other children really like these children are amazing with this youth orchestra. And I feel like, again, Soul doesn't really talk, but Micah always says that he doesn't want to be viewed as different. Like, you know, like I would have their ABA go with them on different things to help them, you know, to, you know, when there was opportunity for them to make friends, my kids don't really know what to do, you know, so they would help them to, hey, why don't you like help them to engage and stuff. But Micah would be like, I don't want kids to look at me like I'm different. You know, I don't want them here. And so I would say as his mother, I feel like I can tell, like when he walks differently, like with confidence, because even though they know that they're different, like he feels included, like he is enough to be included in this orchestra. So
I love that.
That's amazing for me. So that's when I realized, you know, I really have to let go of my fears and what have you, and just really give this kid the tools so that he can go on to do who knows what he's going to do at this point. And might I say, it's so funny because the conductor pulled me into the kitchen and she said, listen, you know, I just want to make sure, like we've had a couple other kiddos that, you know, she said, I don't really know what they had, but she said, we spent a lot of time giving you know, special attention and energy to them. And it was taking away from the rest of the kids. So she was like, if he's not able to keep up, he's not going to be able to stay. Like, we don't have the, you know, time for that. And I said, okay, you know. So when we got home, I said, Soul, she doesn't know if he can do it or not. I'm like, why are you pulling me in the kitchen? Tell him, you know?
Yeah.
But, and so I said, if you want to play, you got to show her that you can handle it. And I mean, and I think she was only going to give him like one song to do at that time. And he came home and he practiced, not as much as I would have liked for him to, but he did. And when he went back 2 days later, it blew her mind away. It blew her mind away. And she was like, then she's patting herself. I know. I knew I saw something in this kid. I already do you, but do you? Yeah. So it's just amazing to see him. And it's, you know, carrying on that torch, you know. Again, like, I don't want to say anything nasty about his dad, but I think it's pretty sad that he's not there, because I feel like he could have given him so much more. But it's okay, because he got it on his own and he has it, and I'm just so very proud of him.
Monique, this is fascinating, and I'm so just like in awe of your story and in awe of your tenacity of giving your sons the opportunities to do so many things and to explore their extraordinary abilities. And so I'm thrilled to hear that Sol was able to blow his orchestra teacher out of the water. But now we're sort of at, like, this is why I think we were so excited for this special episode, is now Sol has an opportunity to go to Spain. So what's going on there? Talk to us about maybe this Indiegogo campaign you have going on.
Yes, we do have a crowd funding page, Indiegogo, and the name of the campaign is Oh, the Places Sol Will Go. And so we are trying to raise funds, because it was such last minute, you know, for the entire family to go. Because of the diagnosis, it just would not be wise or smart to even try to leave Micah at home. And I don't think it, I don't know, I just don't want to.
No, so of course, it's of course. Really
just trying to pay for his tuition and then for us to get over there and for him to play. There's going to be 3 different concerts that he's going to be playing in, second chair violin, and it's an 11-day tour. So,
wow.
Yeah.
And he gets to study under who now? Was it Dr. Papa? Is that what the
Georgette Popa? And she she's classically trained. She's from Europe. She's played there. She's also taught here in LA, USC, UCLA. She's been doing this for 50 years, 50 plus years.
Mm. Wow.
And her orchestra is the only orchestra that is being invited by prime ministers and, you know, from different places to, and they played in the Olympics. So it's a great opportunity for him to learn from someone that is, especially has that confidence in him and his ability as well. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so this is why, when I saw your Indiegogo, I called Jenny and I was like, you know, I was like, this is why we want to do this, right? This is what this platform, if we can use our platform wisely, if there's a way that we can reach anybody to try to share this, and because this is what this art is about, because this whole thing has just been about the power of art and our creativity and where it can lead us and how it can touch us and how it can change everything. Why we're still unusual creatures, you know, like, why? Mm-hmm. Because our art and our creativity changes us and changes others. And, you know, I think it's an extraordinary story.
Absolutely. And I think not even only for, you know, neurotypical creatures, but also especially for those with extraordinary needs. And it's medically proven, the benefits that they receive from being involved in artistic and creative things. So that's why I will fight to the death, you know, to try and put these opportunities before him. So thank you so much for reaching out to me. That really touched my heart. Thank you both.
Yeah, and so you need,
of course,
you need, so how much do you need and by when?
Well, like yesterday, of course, because the orchestra has already, you know, all the kids have already been paid up since, you know, the beginning of the year. This has been planned since last year. So as soon as possible, No donation is too small. We have been so fortunate with my circle of friends that, you know, we've raised over $2,500 so far. The goal would be $14,000, but again, to take whatever, to get, raise whatever we can. Sure. And then, so yeah, sorry.
Yeah. It's okay. And to the audience out there, we are going to post, obviously, the Indiegogo campaign link in the link tree on our Instagram, on Twitter. Tom will post it on Facebook and get it out to the Unusual Creatures Network. We'll email as many folks as we possibly can to make sure that folks, you know this incredible opportunity and understand that the power that art can really have, like you mentioned, not just for neurotypical unusual creatures, but also for folks like Soul that have extraordinary abilities. So we very much look forward to getting the word out as quickly as possible. So that is why we moved things around to make sure that Monique Carter, we got in to hear your beautiful story and those of your incredible children.
And it's crazy that you're not just one child, but Mika has also, art has Micah? Infected. No, I don't say infected. Micah has been affected in positive ways with art. You say he draws and what,
yes,
his
draws and he paints. And that they both started their little artistic ventures during the lockdown. So he's only been drawing for like a year, but you can just see his progression. And I'm just really excited to see where he takes that. You know, I'm super grateful for everything that has just been placed in our hands. And it's just really interesting to see how they're growing and how they are succeeding in whatever areas that they're choosing for themselves.
You say it in the Indiegogo campaign in the beginning. I mean, it's, you know, you're like a lot of the last of these years have been with a lot of sadness, but you've also taken what could be sadness and turned it into some really beautiful things. And, you know, I mean, a lot of lesser people would have given up, but you keep her. This is why mothers need to get their due. And on this very special Mother's Day,
thank you.
I think you're inspiring as a woman, as a creator. So my hat's off to you.
Yeah. And the idea of art being a ripple effect. I'm sort of making the assumption that your sons might not have had the same opportunities if they hadn't had a mother that was creative herself and had done so many beautiful things in the arts. Maybe would have had a different, there would have been a different approach perhaps. And I think art can have such a healing benefit.
Yeah, I do. I do believe that too sometimes, you know, like I play all kinds of music around the house at all times. And I feel like they really have an appreciation for that, you know? And so it's really neat, you know? And I grew up with that as well. My uncle was a DJ. So, you know, growing up in the 80s, I was listening to Wham and, you know, Madonna and, you know, but then also like, you know, Dr. Dre, but when he was wearing sequin pants, you know, nobody knows who that is, you know,
right,
and
the
Dream Team and the Beastie Boys, you know? So I was very fortunate to be blessed with that, because I think that kind of helped me to be more open to different forms of expression once I started dancing as well, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always ask, and even though we're trying to stay positive, but I have to ask, because I always wonder, because art and the chasing of it and the dream is always so sometimes a dark mistress. And do you ever look back and think, like, even you could still like have these kids and be in this situation, and you're ever like, oh, I'm smart. I should have gone to psychology sooner. I should have skipped all of this. Like, do you regret any of your artistic journey?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. And I think, you know, at first I thought, you know, and I'm still growing and I'm still changing. And now that I see my kid getting into this music and seeing that he knows how to play by ear and all of these things, you know, there may be a time when I start doing drum solos and my son Micah is playing the drums and, you know, Soul is playing the violin, making Arabic music, and I'm dancing with them. Now it's just like, we're just tabling dance for right now, because again, you know, sometimes, and it's very hard because I'm always, when I can wake up early enough and creep out of bed before my kids notice, and I go downstairs and I start playing, you know, my samba music and I start dancing, it's just like, I know that is who I am now. You know, I do these other things to help my children, but that's not what I am. And I, as a mother, you wear many hats, you know, but that's not my main hat.
Of course. Girl. I love to hear that you're just tabling dance. I love that. That makes my heart sing.
Thank you.
Well, so one more time, what's the Indiegogo? So everyone, and it's Sol, S-O-L, right? So what is it?
Sol like the sun. He is my corazón. So it's O, the places Sol will go. I know it was around the time of, it was just, what's his name? Dr. Seuss's birthday, right? How creative.
Well, oh, I love it. I love it.
Let's get family to Spain, everybody. Let's do it.
Yes, let's do it.
Pass. The problem is right now, we're just not getting enough views on the, you know, and I don't have time. I've tried to start being on social media, because let's just be honest, that's a way to network now, you know? And yeah. I'm trying, you know, so it's just timing. But I, like I said, I'm still learning a lot, and I'm grateful for the opportunities and grateful for being here. So any support, people, or just good vibes, it's all appreciated and welcomed. And thank you so much.
Monique, thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much for telling your beautiful story. And we hope that the Unusual Creatures podcast makes a big impact on your Indiegogo campaign and helps Sol get to Spain and play his beautiful violin. We're so excited to be a part of the story if we can be in some small way. And so everyone donate, click those links. We appreciate you so much.
I wanted to add one more thing. I know things are tight for people right now. I get that. If anybody wanted to make a donation directly to the orchestra on the behalf of Sol, and then, you know, the tax write-off, tax credit, whatever, you know, because they're, unfortunately, there are no gifts right now, so they would be able to write that off. So just, you know.
And what's the orchestra's name?
It's Classical Irvine Players.
Okay.
Got it.
Okay.
Fantastic. All right. We love you all. Thank you again for joining us this week, Monique. Let's go, Sol and Micah. And you all have a wonderful week. Jennifer, I'm going to rest from that Texas heat. I don't know about
yes,
you.
Yes,
you...
indeed. It's been a long, hot one.
Been a long, hot one.
Thank you so much all... for, yes. Thank you for listening, everyone. Like, you know, like us, support us, tell your friends, pass around this amazing Indiegogo campaign, and we will see you next week. Bye, Tom.
Bye, Jay.
Thanks so much for listening to The Unusual Creatures. We love telling the stories of these creatives, and we hope you love listening to them.
You know the drill. Subscribe where you love listening to pods. Send links to your friends and tell everyone you know about this show. And I mean everyone. Counting the minutes until we meet again. And
keep being unusual creatures.